You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode of the podcast is a Q&A, so I've pulled these ones from Instagram mainly. And before we get on to the Q&A, hopefully you have all either heard or downloaded or seen that my book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available as an audiobook. So, been doing amazing the amount of downloads on Audible and iTunes and all the other apps that I didn't even know existed until a couple of weeks ago. I use Audible myself, which is the audiobook app from Amazon. So nearly every book that's on Amazon is nearly on Audible. Audiobooks are just amazing for saving time. And they give you time back is what I love about them so much, that if you're doing another task like driving or commuting or prepping your meals or washing dishes or out for a walk with the dog, you can listen to an audiobook or a podcast while you're doing that. So it's kind of like a time hack. You may have heard me talk about that in the podcast in the past. Turn your car into a library on wheels, or turn your workouts into a chance and an opportunity to learn. So for example, one of the questions I get frequently is, how do I deal with the boredom of long runs? So ahead of my ultramarathons that I have next year, I'm running a lot of 10 and 20 Ks at the minute at the end of my workouts. So I normally go podcast or audiobook. Generally what I find is, depending on my mood, I will just alternate between the two. So if there's an audiobook that I'm really into, I'll use that because it gives me something to look forward to and I get a motivation to run because I really want to listen to that audiobook, or I save the podcast for the long runs, particularly long form podcasts. One that's, you know, Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan, which are like 3 hours long, I'll generally save them for runs and then I'll double them over with longer books or books that I'm really into. So for example, when I was training for Marathon de Sable, I got through the Michael Jordan book, which is, I think it's titled The Life. It's an unbelievable autobiography. It's written about him and it's a mammoth. It's like 30 hours long. It's just a mammoth of a book. But I use that for part of my training run. So when I was running 20 kilometers at the end of every workout, I would do 10 kilometers listening to that audiobook. I would do another 5 kilometers listening to a short podcast. And then I used to use the last five kilometers, for normally music or motivational videos on YouTube, just because that's when I would be struggling the most. I would get tired at the end of those 20 kilometer runs. So that's how I kind of did it. So just to give people a bit of an idea, so my book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on audio, and be sure to check that out. Please leave a review and rate it. It's already 5-star reviews, and it's been doing amazing. So if you've been getting value, please leave a review. If you think it's crap, don't leave any review. As Russell Brand said at the end of his podcast one day, he's like, nobody likes when you give a 1-star review. Don't hurt anybody's feelings. But no, I'm joking. So if you feel it's crap and you didn't get anything, you can be honest as well. You can leave a review. But hopefully you get loads from it. It's been doing amazing since it came out. So yeah, check that out. www.audible.com or audible.co.uk. And you can check out your favorite audiobook apps or favorite audiobooks on there as well. And you can listen to a sample of mine, first 3 minutes of the mindset section of my book. And you can listen to the samples of any of your other favorites. Generally, what I recommend on audiobooks is listen to a sample, because you may find that you don't really like the narrator. Now, personally, I push to narrate my own book, and I know a lot of authors do. But there's a lot, probably 30-40% that don't narrate their own books, and it's just generally picked off standard readers from whatever application or publisher that's been used. And sometimes you can listen to a narrator and go, oh God, I can't listen to that voice. So check out the sample. That's the beauty of Audible. You can click the 3-minute sample and listen to a part of the book. Figure out, is it something that you'd enjoy? Is it something that you'd kind of connect with? And if you like the sound of the author's voice, the beauty of, personally for me, of doing the audiobook version of The Fitness Mindset was that I record a podcast every week. So it makes it very, very easy to, even though I have to slow it down because of US and just general markets and general markets all over the world, and you have the option then to speed it up to 1.25 or 1.5 if you so choose. So I had to slow it right down. but it's a lot easier because of doing weekly podcasts. So hopefully when you're listening, you'll connect with it a little bit more because I've read it myself. So go check that out. You can listen to a sample, and I highly recommend Audible because it's the one that I use. But I think iTunes, the Google version of audiobooks have their own version. There's loads of different ones and it's on all of them. So whatever your personal preference is, I use Audible. So go check that out. So without further ado, we will jump into today's first question from the Q&A. So first question comes in from Anya Cotter. How does carb cycling work so well for fat loss? So it's a little bit of a loaded question when you've already kind of said that it works so well for fat loss in the question. So what I'm going to talk about here first is I'm a huge fan of carb cycling, but there is a way to do it that will support your goals and there's a way to do it that won't support your goals. So effectively a right and a wrong way. Carb cycling can work very, very effective for fat loss and can work very, very effectively for people looking to bulk up and add size as well, provided that you increase your amount of carbohydrate intake. For those of you unfamiliar with carb cycling, it basically just means that you're taking a different intake of carbohydrate on different days, generally and normally in alignment with your training program. So for example, some of the people coming through my BKF online program or some of the people in my top 50 program, if they're doing a method or version of carb cycling, how I personally do it is low carbohydrate on rest days, moderate carbohydrate on regular training days, and then high carbohydrate on, say, leg days. For my athletes, my GA players, or anyone coming through my GA or my lean body program, we generally do this the day before games or the day of games in order to load up glycogen stores and increase carbohydrate intake so that there's an actual fuel source to tap from. When you're using it for fat loss, that, again, the numbers will change depending on your starting point, depending on your weight, and the carb sources you use may be very, very different depending on your tolerance levels of certain foods. But that effectively, in a breakdown, is what carb cycling is. It's cycling and increasing or decreasing your carbohydrate intake based around my personal preference around your training that day. Some people just do it at random, where they'll go high, medium, low. So Monday is high, Tuesday is medium or moderate, and Wednesday is a high carbohydrate intake day, and then they just rotate that. So it really varies person to person. Some people do a low, where they do 3-4 low days in a row, then a moderate, then a high. That's all carb cycling, and there's no right or wrong way to do it. It's very much finding and experimenting what works best for your body in terms of in alignment with your specific goals. Personally, I like doing it around your training program, and it's one of the benefits of carb cycling. The two main benefits are the fact that when you're carb cycling, you don't get what's called a metabolic stall or a metabolic plateau. You don't plateau on your fat loss like you can with a regular low carbohydrate diet. So what happens with some people is when they go low carbohydrate diet or on a low carbohydrate diet, is they can hit this weight loss or fat loss plateau, and then when they haven't structured in a refeed, which is effectively where you have an increase in carbohydrate or sugars or calories, and it can re-stimulate your metabolism, you can get this what's called a metabolic stall. It's where your metabolism just doesn't really do anything anymore and you plateau. And it's really, really common, because what happens when you go low carbohydrate initially is you get very, very fast results, particularly because when you pull out the glycogen in your body and you pull out the amount of water that glycogen stored carbohydrate was pulling in, you tend to lose a lot of weight pretty quickly. And you can lose body fat, or what is perceived as body fat, very quickly because you look leaner. The bloat goes out of your face, your stomach feels flatter, and you can just feel significantly leaner in the space of a very short period of time, in the space of 5, 6, 7 days. It's why when people go on to low carbohydrate diets or crash diets or fad shake or bar diets, they lose a load of weight and feel a lot leaner the first week or two. It's because you're pulling out all that glycogen, you're pulling out all that stored carbohydrate, and with that you're pulling out the water that's attached to it. So your body feels significantly leaner and you lose a lot of weight on the scale. Again, scale, weight is numbers on a scale, body fat is fat off your body. And when you go low carbohydrate, you can get this response very, very quickly. On top of that, if you are someone that was eating a poor diet, so a lot of refined sugars and refined cereals, and you cook carbohydrates, you're going to get that reduction in inflammation from those carbohydrates as well. So on top of losing weight and losing what's perceived as a lot of body fat because the water has been pulled out of your body, you can reduce the inflammation, which can make you feel a lot better. So that's what happens when a lot of people go low carbohydrate. And as a result of the quick fix that does come with it, you will 100% feel all those positive effects or perceived positive effects in the first week or 10 days. When you go low carbohydrate for too long, your body adapts. Your body is incredible at adapting to different nutritional strategies and different training stimulus. And if you don't switch it up, your body just becomes used to that and it becomes your new norm. For fitness people, if you're a fitness person listening, and I know I've got a range of people from all over that listen to this podcast, but if you're a fitness person and you've been training for more than a year, you've definitely heard at some stage that people tell you you need to change up your training program to continually shock your body to respond, either if you're losing body fat or building muscle or improving performance. A lot of people do this in what's called progressive overload. It's where you gradually increase the weight that you're lifting, or you gradually change some parameter of the training program that you're currently on in order to shock your body to continually respond. So for example, if you're squatting with 20 kilos, in 2-3 weeks you might be squatting with 22.5 kilos, in 4 or 5 weeks you might be squatting with 25 kilos. That's changing up a training stimulus. That's progressively overloading your weight. It's where you're overloading and then gradually increasing it so that you're still feeling that you're given rep range, your 8 to 10 reps, your 60 to 90 second rests, but you're increasing the weight because you're getting physically stronger. That's changing up the training stimulus. You can do this with the rest periods, where you drop your rest periods and you keep the same weight all the way through 6, 12, 18 weeks, but your rest period drops or your tempo changes. So instead of 2 seconds on the way down, 1 second pause, 2 seconds on the way up, you go 4 seconds on the way down and you change up some form of stimulus. Most people that are listening, if you're into fitness, you've heard somebody say you need to change up your training. So even after 6 or 12 weeks, you're onto a new program or you're changing up some form of stimulus or your body doesn't respond. That's similar to carb cycling, that if you go low carbohydrate for too long, your body just adapts to being in a low carbohydrate state. And then all those benefits that you got initially just go back to being your body's norm and you no longer respond. So now you're eating a low carbohydrate diet and you're not losing body fat. What carb cycling can do, or alternatively a carb refeed, where you structure in a strategic refeed, which just means you increase your carbohydrates or sugars or calories on a specific day out of a low carbohydrate or low calorie diet, and you can spike your metabolism so it doesn't stall. That metabolic stall is what happens when your body has become used and accustomed to having a lower intake of carbohydrate. When you increase that strategically through carb cycling, it can stimulate your metabolism, and that's why it's so effective for fat loss. Because when your metabolism stalls, you can be eating low carbohydrate and feeling all the negative effects like low energy and just not feeling that good, you know, not getting a pump in the gym because of lack of glycogen or not being able to put glucose into the cell. And when you don't re-stimulate or don't resurge your metabolism from a strategic refeed or carb cycling, your training can massively plateau because your energy levels are low. So now your fat loss has plateaued because you've nutritionally and physiologically adapted to being in a low carbohydrate state, and then your training as a result can take a hit because your energy levels are lower. Carb cycling stops this because it stimulates that metabolism and it gives you that refeed of energy. So that's why I'm such a big fan of it for fat loss. So what I would advise is, if fat loss is your primary goal and you're considering using carb cycling as the method, again, find what method works best for you. If you want to go low carbohydrate with a refeed where you do, you know, 7 days of low carbohydrate and a refeed, which is either strategic 500, 1,000 grams of carbohydrate, whatever your number is, depending on your starting weight, depending on your body fat currently, depending on your training program, whatever your refeed is, your 500 grams of carbohydrates for argument's sake, then you strategically add that in once a week or once every 10 days or once every 14 days. So depending on your starting point, when I was doing one-to-one PT back about 3 years ago, very much so if I had a client that had been sent to me from a doctor, from a GP, from a general practitioner, I would strategically keep carbohydrates lower if I was trying to improve insulin sensitivity in those individuals, but then I would strategically include a refeed, either physiologically every 7, 10 or 14 days if somebody was really good with nutrition and they were really had already made the psychological switch to make a difference in their life. If they needed the psychological effect of food, I included the refeed even in less spatial amounts of days, in reduced amount of days. So every 3-4 days we'd have a refeed or a high carbohydrate day, just in order that they were able to stick to it long term. So it's very much about finding what works for you. One of the things that is worth considering is the psychological effect of carbohydrates and the emotional effect of food, and how powerful that can be towards keeping you on track long term. One of the reasons that fad diets, bar diets, shake diets, or restricted calorie minus 1,000 calorie low carbohydrate diets don't work long term is because they just break you down psychologically. You get all the physiological and endocrinological issues that come alongside that. Your ghrelin, your leptin, your hunger satiation hormones, your downregulation of metabolism, all these negative effects can come from those diets and calorie and a massive calorie restricted state without strategic refeeds. But the psychological effect can really break you down because of one of two things. Carbohydrates make you generally feel good. They give you energy. That's what they do. So cycling them in every time you have an exceptionally hard training session or just for their psychological effects can keep you on track long term. The other thing that can benefit and work in its favor is that your training doesn't suffer. I know in the past when I've gone low carbohydrate for very long periods of time, and I'm very fat adapted in terms of on the genetic scale, I work way better off fats than I do off carbohydrate. Yet, if I drop my carbohydrates too low for too long, my training suffers, particularly my weight training. Not so much my endurance, where my body can use fat as a fuel source and I'm working at 70% of my maximum heart rate. My body can work in an endurance marathon distance or long cycle or a swim on a high fat diet. But as soon as I start to lift weights, which is mainly glycolic, where you're trying to push that glucose into the muscle, that will, my performance in the gym will suffer dramatically. So having a strategic refeed or having a high carbohydrate day negates that. It means that on your hardest training sessions, you're not suffering from a lack of glucose or glycogen in your body. So for example, I always have a strategic refeed or I always have a high carbohydrate day either before or during my leg day because those workouts are brutal. And what I would advise is do something similar. If you're unsure of carb cycling and you want to follow low carb or you want to actually do a carb cycling protocol, calculate your numbers. They're going to be very, very different for each person. Some person is going to be 100 grams on their high carbohydrate day. For somebody else, that's going to be their low day. It's very, very relative to each person, depending on how carb adapted you are, on how carb tolerant you are, your starting point, your weight, your body fat percentage, the training program you're on. If you're a high-end athlete, I have a lot of my GA players, even though they're doing carb cycling, their carbohydrates are still significantly higher than the general population because they're in a glycolic sport. They're in a sport that's using glycogen and glucose as its primary fuel source. They're in a sprint-based sport. So their carb numbers are higher. People I'm working with in my Top 50 program or my BKF online program that are working towards a carb cycling protocol, their numbers tend to be lower because they're not performance primarily, their body composition primarily, to lose body fat or build muscle, and then performance is nearly the secondary benefit that comes alongside that. The negatives of carb cycling are if you choose a really poor source of carbohydrate to cycle with, you can get a lot of negative effects with it. And I've experimented with this, and it's more, I'm going to bring it up just so you're mindful of it, because it's individual to each person. You can carb cycle with an IIFYM attitude of if it fits your macros and it doesn't matter where your carbohydrate sources come from. And for some people, that may be true. You can carbohydrate load on your high carb days with penny sweets, sugary sweets, and lots of poor quality foods that have higher concentrations of carbohydrates. And yes, you can do this, and for some people it will work. For me and a lot of people I've worked with, generally when you do this, the gut distress that comes with eating clean or eating low carbohydrates and then fueling your digestive tract with all these sugary and crappy ingredients, it can cause a lot of digestive discomfort. It can cause a lot of inflammation in your gut and just in your body in general, so that your joints and ligaments and everything ache the next day, which is a real thing if you're consuming way too much sugar and that increase in inflammation systemically from the consumption of those foods. So I would make sure that you are, if you decide that you're going to do your carb cycling and their high carb days are going to include really poor quality carbohydrates, experiment with it first before you base your entire protocol around it. And you can do it, and some people use it as an excuse to eat really poor carbohydrate foods on, oh, well, it's my high carb day. It's the same adage of, oh, it's my cheat day, I can eat what I want. And that generally doesn't serve you that well long term. By all means, factor in free meals, factor in foods you enjoy. If you want some sugary foods and that's what you enjoy and you want to have it on your high carb days, by all means, factor it in. Just if you're getting negative effects, either from an inflammatory standpoint or from a body composition standpoint or from a mood standpoint, because of the effect on dopamine and the effect of serotonin, your actual happy hormone, from too much sugar. And I use sugar as the component because it's most carbohydrate foods will eat, and easily consumed high carbohydrate foods are generally very high in sugar. So that's why I'm using that as the unit, the actual food that we're talking or that I'm discussing. Just be mindful if you're having negative effects with it and you're using your carb cycling protocol with high sugar and your body isn't responding in a positive way, it may be worth sticking to complex carbohydrates for the majority part. So sweet potatoes, oats, quinoa, brown basmati rice, vegetables, certain fruits, using your carb cycling with these foods. Again, everyone is very individual. Some people are way more tolerant to certain carbohydrates and sugars than others. Some people can't handle certain glutens. So pasta, spaghetti may be out for some people, where they may work tremendously well for others. So experiment with it. Carb cycling works very, very well for fat loss if you're in a calorie deficit and you're following a training program and using supplements that are in alignment with losing fat. If you're doing carb cycling and you're in a calorie surplus and you're eating way too many calories, or you're choosing poor quality foods, carb cycling won't work for fat loss. It's nearly as simple as that. Even though your body isn't as simple as 1 + 1 = 2, if you're eating way too many calories and you're eating way too many crappy foods and you're choosing poor quality carb ingredients, even if you're cycling your carbs moderate, low, and high, or you're going low for several days and then you're going high for one day as a refeed, you probably still won't lose body fat that quickly if you're not in a calorie deficit or you haven't calculated your other macros around it. You haven't played around with your protein to make sure that you're getting enough amino acids so you can actually repair from workouts, and you haven't manipulated your fats around your carbohydrate cycling intake. One of the biggest mistakes people make with carb cycling, and I'm onto the negatives now, is when they manipulate their carbohydrates, they forget to manipulate their fats in alignment with it. So generally, you need to calculate your calories for what you want to consume each day. So if you're trying to consume 2,000 calories, but one of your day you consume 500 grams of carbohydrates and another day you consume 100 grams of carbohydrates, if you don't consume a higher amount of fat in particular as opposed to protein, so you don't get any pro-inflammatory response from way too much protein in your body, if you don't manipulate and adjust your fat intake on the low carbohydrate days, you're going to be reducing your calories significantly, which can have a negative effect on your metabolism as well. So just make sure that if you're eating a high carb day and using high carbohydrates, you reduce your fat on those days and then you flip it on the other days. On the days that you're using low carbohydrate, your fats are going to be higher on those days. And then on moderate days, you're going split between the two. So you've got a moderate intake of both. And then your your protein stays normally consistent. Again, depending on your protocol, if you're protein cycling, if you're amino acid shifting, where you're consuming different amino acids on different days. Again, there's lots of different protocols and there is no one right or wrong way. It's about finding what works best for you. But best practices will say in order to change your composition to lose body fat, you need to be in a calorie deficit so that you're eating less foods than your body needs so that you can burn fat as a fuel source or that you can burn more calories than you're actually consuming. Cycling your carbohydrates can be an effective way to do this so that your metabolism doesn't stall and so that your metabolism doesn't let you down when you need it to be using fat as a fuel source. So carb cycling or carb refeeds can be very effective at negating the negative effects of low carbohydrate diets. However, there are negatives that come with it. If you don't adjust your fats with it, you're going to reduce your calories way too much and your training will suffer, and potential hormones and different physiological regulation, ghrelin, leptin, those hunger satiation hormones can all become downregulated if you don't manipulate your calorie intake on those low carbohydrate days. But as a general rule, it works very well for the majority of people and I'm a big fan. So if you want to use it for fat loss, by all means, 100% use it. Just keep in mind the negatives and then test it. If it works, keep doing it. If it doesn't, cut it. Okay, next question comes in from Lorraine Tompkins. Any tips for knee pain when I squat and lunge? So just as a disclaimer, I'm not a physiotherapist or a clinical physiotherapist in any way. So if you have a long-term occurring injury, I would 100% get your physio to look at it. However, I'm going to offer a couple of tips that are very, very easily fixed in the majority of people who have knee pain when they squat and lunge. And I'm going to come at it from a actual physical biomechanical standpoint. But if you have a long-term injury, by all means, get your physio to look at it. I have a couple of physios that I've recommended on the podcast in the past, or any of your local or team physios that come highly recommended. Definitely get that looked into and checked if you're worried about it long-term. However, with knee pain when you squat and lunge, there's a couple of tips I'm going to offer here. One is a form issue. And what I find with a lot of people who have knee pain when they squat and lunge, and particularly those two movement patterns, because they're two movement patterns that are very, very easy to perform wrong. Your body will always move in the path of least resistance. And one of the reasons that when I was working one-to-one as a PT, I would always have my clients squat or lunge the first day, just with body weights, so that I could adjust their biomechanical movement pattern on how they stepped or how they squatted. You can tell a lot by a person's actual biomechanical makeup or even the job they do and how they live their life based on how they squat and lunge. I could always tell someone that worked in an office from their anterior pelvic tilt when they drop into a squat. I could always tell if somebody had a running background from the way that they'd step on a lunge if they had a pronation or a supination of their foot. So there's a lot you can tell from somebody from their squat and lunge. With knee pain, one very easy way to fix it can be adjusting the form. So firstly, when you're squatting and doing lunges, there's a couple of form techniques that I apply to nearly everybody. This is the 95% rule, that this applies to 95% of people and there's 5% of people it won't apply to. But when you're squatting and when you're stepping into a lunge, one of the way you load the weight through your foot is going to be crucial to the way that you perform that movement throughout your body. So for example, when you're doing a squat, my general rule for my athletes, for people changing body composition, is the weight needs to be through your heel and through the outside of your foot, and you should be able to wiggle your toes at the bottom and top of the squat. That's a sign that you're loading correctly through your foot and you're not straining your knee or straining any other ligaments or tendons by rolling your knee inwards onto your toes, which happens with a lot of people. If you have weak quads or weak glutes or tight hips, your knees can start to roll inwards as you drop into a squat, or your anterior pelvic tilt, where your hips start to flick forward as you drop into a squat. And that can all put external pressure on the knee or on any of the muscles, joints, or ligaments around your lower body. So when you drop into a squat, make sure that you're keeping the weight through your heels and the outside of your foot and use the wiggle toe test. One of the things that I would do, I still do this with online clients if they have any issues with their squat or lunge, is to wiggle your toes at the bottom of your squat. Take a wide enough stance so that it supports your body. If you're taller, you're taking a slightly wider stance. If you're shorter, you may have a slightly narrower stance than shoulder width apart on your squat. And then when you drop in, you're keeping the weight through the outside of your heels and keeping the weight through the outside of your foot, and you're able to wiggle your toes at the bottom. Start with a body weight squat and then progressively overload it up. That's how you should always base if you're either rehabbing from an injury or you're trying to perfect or retrain your muscular system to perform a squat in a different way or in a different movement pattern. Start with your body weight and then gradually increase the weight you're using. That's progressively overloading. And when you do that, you're able to retrain your body to perform that movement in the correct way, and then you can load it for the resistance so that you're failing at your given rep range. You know, hypertrophy, if you're trying to put on muscle, 8 to 10 reps, 3 to 4 sets, 60 to 90 second rests, and then you can load in that fashion. Your lunge is the exact same. One of the issues that can come with a lunge is balance. So if there's an issue with core strength, you can watch on that too. But generally, for a lot of people, it's going to be the same idea of stepping forward, weight through your heels, outside of your foot, and then dropping into your lunge. If somebody's dropping, or you're dropping, if you're a personal trainer listening and your client's dropping, or if it's you that's doing this and you're dropping forward at your hips on a lunge, it may be a sign that you've got weak core strength, that you may need to work on a program that's going to improve that as well. All of these things are connected. So even if your core strength is weak and you don't have knee pain now, there's a chance down the line you could potentially get knee pain. You're only as strong as your weakest link on your body. And what happens with a lot of people is if you have an issue in your kinetic chain, or if you have an issue elsewhere in your body, you get this super compensatory effect, where if your lower back is weak, or if your glutes have switched off and your hip flexors have tightened, and then your IT band is tightened up because your hip flexors have tightened, and now you've got patella tendonitis pulling on your tendon, and then your foot is thrown out of whack when you step, that can all have a super compensatory effect. So the analogy that I like to use is that of tug of war. If you're in a tug of war team and you've got 10 people in your team and one person stops pulling, everybody else, the nine people have to work harder. That's how your body is as well. If your glutes have switched off, or your hamstrings are tight, or your lower back is giving you trouble, everything else around that has to work harder. All those other muscles or everything else in the kinetic chain has to work harder to try and compensate for that injury or compensate for that weakness. Your knee pain is going to be the same. So you want to make sure that you're fixing everything and not just looking at your knee, because you can do things like, if it's in a lot of cases patella tendonitis or issues in the tendon, you'll find a lot of people can do foam rolling, and that will fix the knee pain. It will 100%. If you've got an inflamed IT band and it's pulling on the tendon underneath your knee, you can roll your IT band, and as painful and agonizing as it'll be, it'll give you a nearly instant relief in your knee pain, but that won't fix it. If there's an issue coming elsewhere in the body, for example, with a lot of people that do foam rolling on their IT band when they've got knee pain, there's normally an issue where that glute isn't activating on that side, or your glute isn't activating on both sides, and there's a super compensatory effect. So in your training program, you need to have some form of glute activation or some form of movement patterns that are going to engage that muscle group. That's what's going to rehab you back properly, and that's what's going to pull and take that strain off of your IT band and reduce that inflammation. It could be also a dietary issue. If you've got way too much inflammation in your diet from consuming too much sugar or consuming foods that you're intolerant to, that can all increase inflammation in your diet, and it can make knee pain worse, or it can make any pain worse because of the increased inflammatory response that your body's having to those foods. So there's lots of different factors that come into play here. What I would advise is check your squat and lunge. For the most part, it's my area of expertise. I'm not going to tell somebody how to exactly rehab an issue with a tendon or a ligament or an ACL. That's a job for a physio, somebody way more qualified in that area. But from a form standpoint, and a lot of people that have knee issues, comes from just having poor form on a squat or a lunge. One of the reasons that it's so important when you go into the gym first is to have a personal trainer, or to have a gym instructor, or to have somebody that's familiar with biomechanics show you how to perform these movements patterns. Because if you do them wrong initially, it's very difficult to go back and retrain your body. It's a neuromuscular response, and your body gets used to training and performing that movement in that way. It's why it's so hard to retrain somebody to squat and do a deadlift, because if they've learned it one way, you start reinforcing that negative movement pattern neuromuscularly. It's one of the analogy I like to use is when you walk through a jungle, and the first time you go to a jungle, you got to chop things down and you got to walk through and you got to move the trees out of the way and move the branches, and then you come back the next day and it's a little bit clearer what path you were on. And then if after you've done it for 365 days, there's a full-blown path where you walk through the jungle every day. That's the same as movement patterns. The more you perform the movement pattern, you get a neuromuscular adaptation to that movement pattern and how to perform it in that way. It's like walking through that jungle. But if you walk through the jungle the wrong way or on an incorrect path, you're reinforcing that the way that that's the way that you need to go. And that's what happens with, say, things like squats, lunges, and deadlifts. If you do them incorrectly and then you start loading them with weight or with resistance, it makes it very hard to go back to body weight and retrain somebody. So if you have knee pain, it may take a little bit of an ego hit at the beginning that you need to go back and just do body weight to get the form right and then progressively overload it. But that will help you massively, and you'll get better body composition as a result. You'll have less injuries as a result, and you'll probably get rid of your knee pain as a result. Another issue that you can look into straight away, and if you have issues with your hips, look into elevating your heels so that you don't have to completely stop doing squats while you repair. And that can take a lot of pressure off the knee as well, particularly if it's coming from your hips where you have an anterior pelvic tilt where your hips roll forward on the bottom part movement of a squat. Elevating your hips and taking a slightly wider stance can normally alleviate this like instantly, so that you don't actually have to stop squatting even while you rehab out, get your glutes activating, loosening your kinetic chain, doing hamstring work, PNF stretches to the hamstrings to release all that tightness to the back of your kinetic chain. Whatever it is that's causing the knee pain, you need to figure that out, fix your body as a whole, make sure that the form is perfect on the movements, and then load them and then increase resistance on them. And that's how you get stronger, that's how you get better body composition, and that's how you reduce injuries. Okay, next question comes in from Shas Musk G. I hope I haven't butchered that. I'm sure I have. Apologies, Shas. Any good money investment book, preferably on Audible? So I have a couple of my favorites that I've got a lot of benefit from, and I consume a lot of books on finances and just money tips in general. Even though it's something that I'm very good with now, it's something I haven't been historically good with. A lot of you know my story about going broke at 25 when I was trying to get my business off the ground, how it took me 3 attempts. So I had to learn how to get better with money. Because again, like everything, it's a learned skill. And money is the exact same. And if you don't know what you want, you'll take whatever you get. And if you're left to your own devices, your money strategy tends to be whatever you have grown up with. So if your parents were savers or your mom or dad was a saver, you tend to be the same. If they tend to live a YOLO and spend every penny that came in, you tend to be the same. You tend to form the habits of your parents. One of the issues that I've had to work with tremendously over the years is a scarcity mindset. Again, we didn't grow up with a lot of money, and I have that ingrained System 1 scarcity mindset, even though I'm so fortunate with the living that I make. And realistically, I with the investments I've made, I'll never have to worry about money again. But that scarcity mindset is still hardwired in my DNA from the way I was brought up. And it's just, there's nothing you can do about it. If you were brought up and you didn't have a lot of money, there's a good chance you're going to have that scarcity mindset. If you were brought up in a house with an abundance of money, you're probably not going to have either the value on it, or you're not going to have that scarcity mindset on it. It very much depends. Just recognizing that is going to be automatic if you haven't acknowledged it. And if you're always wondering why you have no money in your bank account, or you're always wondering why you're constantly worried about money, realize that it's probably hardwired in your DNA from the way that you were brought up. So I've had to really learn how to invest my money. I've had to learn how money effectively works. So I had a unsupporting belief system of the regular 9 to 5, that you have job security, you go get a job, you work 9 to 5, or, you know, in my case, 8 to 4 when I was working as a teacher, and you get your paycheck at the end of the week, you save a certain amount of money, you take vacation time and your holidays, and then you go away, and then you just work throughout the year. That was my thought process on job security and money in general. And that's how it worked. You got money because somebody paid you for a job that you do, which is effectively true. But that earth-shattering paradigm shifted, or I had an earth-shattering paradigm shift when I read a book that I'm going to recommend now, that I think anybody looking to improve their knowledge on money and how the world works in general would benefit from reading. And I've had several friends, a couple of people coming through my mentorship program, a couple of people I've worked with, and a couple of close personal friends who have struggled with money for whatever reason, either similar to me with a scarcity mindset, or the other side where they were constantly outspending their money coming in. And I recommended this book. Now, there are other ones I like. I like the Rob Moore's book on money. I like the Tony Robbins's book on money and Unshakable, particularly for investing. I love anything by Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett for investing in general, and how to see the world in terms of money doesn't necessarily, you don't work for money, that money works for you, and how to use leverage in order to invest in certain areas of life, whether stocks or real estate or land or people or businesses or startups, and using the leverage of other people's time with your initial financial backing to make money on the back end whilst other people work. That all of those books have supported me, but the one that's helped me more than any other is Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad. That was the book that literally changed my life. And for those of you who are longtime listeners, I recorded an episode, I think it was episode 100 or episode 99, on the top 5 books that changed my life. And I highly recommend listening to that episode if you're considering downloading a couple of different books on Audible, or considering consuming a couple of different books. They're not necessarily my favorite books, because I have books that I prefer reading, but they're the ones that changed my life, because they either shifted a mindset that I had previously held, or a non-supporting belief system that I had previously held, or they made me see things in a different way. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And Robert Kiyosaki's book was my catalyst for, one, making the change and quitting my job and getting my business off the ground, combined with the way I was brought up wasn't necessarily the way the world is or has to be, and just because it was my version of reality didn't mean it was the reality of the world. And that book blew open those gates for me, because what it does is, for those of you, to give you a little bit of a premise, it's effectively about this young kid growing up in Hawaii, and he's got two dads, his rich dad and his poor dad. His poor dad is his real dad, his dad who works as a college lecturer, very, very highly intelligent, has several degrees, and works at a local university or a local college, I can't remember now, but is always struggling for money, but went down the traditional path of traditional education, but never seems to have any money. And then he's got his rich dad, which is his friend's dad, who dropped out of school at 16, started his own business, and now invests in property and businesses around Hawaii, and is one of the richest men in Hawaii. And he compares the two people, and it made me realize that I had grown up a life knowing that you, knowing, quote unquote, knowing, for which is something I bring back frequently. Every time I think I know something, I realize I don't. You know, I love the Socrates quote, that people thought Socrates, the great Greek philosopher, was one of the most inspiring people of all time, because he said the only thing that he knows is that he knows nothing. And that's effectively how I felt after having read that book. I thought that, or I knew, if we're being really honest, I knew that this is how you live your life. You go to college, you get a degree, you get a good job, you buy a house, you get married, you have kids, you retire at 65, you travel and you die. That was my, that's consciously or subconsciously, it was the way that I thought the world worked. And when I started to realize that it doesn't have to be this way, there's people doing what they love or starting their own businesses or investing in other ventures where they put money on the front end and earn money on the back end, which is effectively Robert Kiyosaki's thought process on investing in real estate and different businesses. And you don't have to invest in real estate or businesses to get the message from that book. And he speaks a lot about the fact that you need to let money work for you. And it's not about the investment you make, whether you go into real estate or whether you go into stocks or whether you put money into physical cash savings, you invest in land, or you invest in businesses or startups. It's not about where you invest it. It's about the mindset you have towards investment that's important. And when you start realizing and stop playing the short-term goal or stop playing the short-term game on investment, that you can be very, very secure over the long term if you educate yourself now on what can potentially change your attitude towards money. If you're somebody that wants financial freedom, and my definition of financial freedom is never worrying about paying bills, never worrying about money coming in, because there's always consistent money coming in through either royalties or programs or businesses or investments or portfolios from real estate or stocks or dividends. There's always money coming in. That's financial freedom for me. Again, find what it means for you. For you, maybe to have 10 years worth of savings so that you can retire. You know, it really, really varies person to person. And again, it's age dependent. So that book made me see the world in a different way. It made me realize that what I had grown up to believe wasn't necessarily true. And it had this catalyst effect on all the other things that I thought I knew that I really don't know. And I spoke in my book, The Fitness Mindset, that there's only really three things to know something. There's the things you know, there's the things you don't know, and there's the things you don't know you don't know. And it's not what the things we don't know that kill us, because the things we don't know we can learn. It's the things we don't know we don't know. If we have a bad habit, or we're living a lifestyle, or living or telling ourselves a story, or having a belief system that isn't supporting us, but we don't know it's not supporting us, there's nothing we can do about it. When you know you're in a bad relationship, when you know you haven't got a good outlook on the world, when you know you're not surrounding yourself with the right people, when you know you're not doing the job that you were meant to do, or you're not doing, your internal compass is pointing in a different direction, yet you're still walking that way. When you know all these things, you can do something about them. It's the things you don't know you don't know, and books bridge that gap. That's one of the reasons why when I'm asked at conferences, or when I'm asked, when I'm speaking about the things that have changed my life the most over the last 5-6 years, is a combination of one, getting up earlier, which is something I do routinely now because it allows me to get a head start on the day and control my morning before I'm reacting to everything else that's going on in the world. But the other was reading more books. I've read probably 600 books in the last 3 years, which is significantly. I'd read maybe 10 books up to that point, up until I was 25. And over the last 3 years, it's just grown exponentially, particularly for me with audiobooks, because I drive 2 hours every day. It allows me to get through at least one or two audiobooks every week. And then I have a physical book that I'm normally reading at the weekend, and I rotate between. That bridges the gaps. And when you start doing the right things consistently well, and extraordinary results come from doing ordinary things consistently day after day. And when you're doing the right things consistently day after day, and you are learning and going to bed a little bit wiser than you were when you woke up, and you're moving slightly forward towards where your internal compass is pointing, either in a relationship, in a job, in your finances, in your fitness, if you're gradually moving and you're moving in the right direction, it doesn't matter how slowly you go, as long as you're moving in the right direction and you keep moving. Books can bridge that gap. There's not a coincidence that I went from living a life like I had grown up to think success was, working in a job that I liked but didn't love, being around people who I liked but didn't really trust, living a life that felt hollow at the age of 25. And then I started to consume more information. I started to audit the people I was following on social media. I started to consume and read more books and listen to more podcasts that were supporting the version of the person I wanted to become. And your hero should always be you in 10 years. Who is it that you want to be? Who's your hero? Step into that vision. Picture that person in 5 years' time. Picture that person in 10 years' time. And then start doing the things today that allow you to become that person in the future. Your hero should be you of 10 years. And when you do that and you consume the right books around whatever area of your life, investment and money in this particular situation, you start changing the way you see things because their ideas become your ideas. And then you can't, after a certain point, you can't distinguish where their idea and your idea begins and ends because you've adopted their thought process and you started to see the world they see it. You started to see the world the way that they see it. That's what a good money investment book can do. It can change the way you see everything. I personally could never go back to a 9-to-5 now, ever go back to a job, which quote unquote, I did an episode on job security recently that got a lot of downloads for those of you who wanted to start your own business but had the fear of losing that regular paycheck. I could never go back to that lifestyle now, knowing what I know about the investment world, knowing what I know about having money work for me, knowing what I know about leverage and putting in your own time and effort up front to reap the rewards on the back end, and an 80-20 Pareto principle that if you put 80% of your work up front, you're going to get 80% of those benefits on the back end. Knowing that now, I could never go back the other way, but that's a knowledge thing. And when you combine that with imagination on who you want to be and stepping into that future, you're going to have an amazing life. I love the Einstein quote that knowledge will get you from A to B, but imagination will get you everywhere. When you combine those two things and you combine the knowledge that you consume from books and podcasts and audiobooks, and you combine it with the imagination of the person that you want to become, and you start stepping into that vision daily and doing the right things every day, step by step we get ahead, and you go to bed wiser a little bit every single night. In this life, to get what you want, you have to deserve what you want. And if you want more money, you need to deserve more money. You either need to learn and consume the information that allows you to make better investments, or you need to find a way to serve the world in a better way. You want to become a millionaire? Find a way to serve a million people. You want to be in an amazing relationship? How do you deserve being in an amazing relationship? You need to show up. You need to be loyal. You need to be trustworthy. You need to be present. You need to be attentive. How do you deserve what you want? To get what you want, you have to deserve what you want. To be in great shape, you have to deserve to be in great shape. You have to habitually make the right food choices that support the inversion of who you want to become. You have to consistently do a training program or a training regimen or an exercise program that allows you to lose body fat, that allows you to improve your performance, that allows you to build muscle. You don't get anything in this life by just wishing for it. It's one of the reasons that I have such an issue with the law of attraction without action. I'm a big believer in the law of attraction with action, because when you actually do the work and you can see it and hold it in your mind, you can see it in your mind, you can hold it in your hand. But if you don't do the work, nothing comes from it. The law of attraction by itself doesn't fucking do anything. You have to put in the work. And the bridge between a dream and success and what you want is hard work. It's doing the work that you need to do. And when you do that, and that may be reading the books, that may be doing the reps in the gym, that may be being around the right people, that may be having the not letting the fear stop you and realizing that fear is false evidence appearing real, and you actually make that jump into a new job or into a new relationship or into a new gym routine or whatever it is to become a stronger version of you, it doesn't matter. But it only works when you can see it in your mind, you can step into that vision, you do the work daily that allows you to get there, and you do it step by step, you get ahead. To get what you want, you have to deserve what you want. That's the question to ask yourself. It's not about how do I make more money? How do I deserve more money? It's not about how do I get a better body? It's how do I deserve a better body? It's not how do I get a great relationship or a great boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife? How do I deserve to have a great boyfriend, girlfriend, husband or wife? Start changing the way you ask these questions. Start changing the way you see it and your whole world will open up. I had that paradigm shift, and that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, was my catalyst. It made me question everything, because because that was such a tightly held belief system, because it was the one I was brought up with and I never questioned it. I just assumed that was the way the world worked, and it's worked as a catalyst for me to question everything. And that's why I started reading more books and listening to more podcasts and following more people who were doing what I wanted to do, listening to the people who I would change position with in that, change positions with in that part of their life. One of the things I've said in this podcast in the past is, if you wouldn't switch positions with somebody, why are you listening to them? And again, their context can be key. Sometimes somebody can have a genius level amount of information on finances and they just temporarily are bankrupt. They can have incredible knowledge on relationships and how it means to show up in a relationship, but they're currently single. They may have amazing knowledge on fitness and nutrition, but they've had an injury and they can't train right now. So context is always key. But for 99 out of 100 cases, why are you listening to somebody you wouldn't change positions with? Why are you listening to those family members? Why are you listening to those friends? Why are you listening to everybody's opinion, not realizing that all they are opinions? They're opinions and perspectives at this moment in time, and we're letting them dictate the direction we take our lives. It's not about their opinion. Opinions change. They don't guide how you take your life. And when you can disconnect yourself from the opinions of others, and when you can disconnect yourself from the perspectives that other people hold of what you should do, and you can start focusing and following on one course until success, acronym for focus, and you start focusing on the thing that makes you a better version of you, and you start focusing on making sure your internal compass is pointing in the right direction, that your ladder is up against the right wall, and you're climbing the ladder against the right wall, when you start doing that, then you can consume the right information that supports that. Then you can step into that vision of who you want to become. Then you can get what you want because you deserve what you want. Do it every single day. Step by step, we get ahead. That's money. That's investment. That's business. That's relationships. That's everything. Personally, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is my recommendation on this one. But Your Rich Dad, Poor Dad may be a different book. All I'll offer is, consume those audiobooks, consume those physical books, listen to those podcasts, follow those people who are supporting you becoming a better version of you, because it will click. It will come. You will have that penny drop moment when something is said that lands and resonates, and it landed and resonated for a reason. Then it's up to you to follow that path and not letting your story that you're not good enough or you don't deserve it or you can't do it dictate what direction you take, because that's letting other people's opinions seep in and dictate the direction you take your life. Your internal compass knows what you want. You get that good feeling that that's the person you want to be with. That's the job you want to do. That's the body that you want or the way you want to feel. You know, because your internal compass is pointing in that direction. My advice is, follow that compass, get your ladder against that right wall, and then start climbing it. So there we have it for today's episode. Again, went off on a little bit of a rant at the end of the money investment question. That was supposed to be just a short 2-minute answer. And then, that's what happens with the podcast sometimes, for those of you who are long-time listeners. So hopefully you got a lot of value from it and from the other questions as well. Be sure to hit me up on Instagram. Please, if you got value in this, please just tag me in your story if you're listening to the podcast, or leave a review on iTunes. I check out all those reviews and I will love you forever if you do. Thanks again for listening. I'll catch you all next week.
Quick message before you head off. Just letting you know, my best-selling book, The Fitness Mindset, is now available on Audible and all major audiobook apps. If you're like me and love listening to books while you travel or work out, be sure to go to audible.co.uk or audible.com to check out the audio version of The Fitness Mindset. You can listen to a 3-minute sample on there, or you can download the full book. Also, last thing before you leave, if you try Clean Cut Meals, the sponsors of today's episode, be sure to enter the code BKF at the checkout to get your 20% off your first order. Clean Cut Meals are doing all my food for my next adventure challenge coming early next year. I'll be announcing more about that during next month's podcast, and I'm just waiting actually on medical clearance. So stay tuned for that. And remember, code BKF at the checkout for 20% off your first order. Catch you all next week.